When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas. Joining me, as always, my good friend, fellow University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green on this late, dreary, rainy Sunday night in Knoxville, Tennessee. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Just holding it down for Decatur, Georgia.
Just holding it down for Decatur, Georgia.
Because you said Knoxville, that implies we're both in Knoxville. But I gotta make it clear that I'm repping Dacula, as you like to say.
It is Dacula. Did you see that your there, Dacula Falcons, I think won their last playoff game, and the North Gwinnett Bulldogs went down.
Oh, did Decatur win?
I thought they won.
I always forget to look for Decatur because they're not a 7A. Like so many of the other Gwinnett County schools. But yeah, I saw...
They went down to Brunswick or something, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw Brookwood, beat North this past week. But yeah, it's interesting. I think in the final eight in 7A, I think Lowndes, I think, might be the only South Georgia school left. I think they're all like Metro Atlanta. It's like Roswell, Brookwood.
Roswell won. I know Brookwood won. Milton won.
Milton's in there, yeah.
Mill Creek barely won, I think. Did they beat McEachern or something? And then...
Sure. I just saw the bracket.
Well, the best team is Collins Hill, who's undefeated.
Oh, and Collins Hill, yeah. I forgot about it. Yeah, they're like the number one. They're like the number three team in the country, I think.
Yeah. I don't understand what happened there, why they're suddenly... Oh, and I think Grayson won as well.
I think Travis Hunter is back.
But like even before that, he's missed most of the year. But I just... It was more of a broader question of like, I don't understand how Collins Hill became this superpower. Like they were so bad for both of our lives growing up in football. They were the Maya Moore school. They were basketball.
Yeah, I feel like they were always good when I was growing up, like over there, because I grew up in the Collins Hill area. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, I think the last 10 years, maybe even more, they haven't been that good. So they kind of out of nowhere, just kind of this powerhouse season. Because what's the Horn? Where's he committed? Do you know?
Mizzou.
Yeah, so I mean, he's big time too. So
well, he was originally UT. He flipped to Mizzou after Pruitt got fired.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
to get a number that's not in the 20s once he gets to college. It grinds my gears every time I see that guy.
I wonder if he'll do that in college. I don't know.
You pull the Heath Shuler.
Do you think Jordan Davis should have to wear a different jersey when he lines up at fullback?
No, why would you? College, anyone can wear anything except for quarterbacks. That's the only ones they care about. You just can't, just 0 to 19.
The Heisman stuff is bonkers because like I did not think I would get to this point, but like it makes me physically unwell to admit, Matt Green, that I think Jordan Davis is like my favorite for the Heisman at this point.
Really? You going out on the limb?
Well,
Jordan,
I think
Davis, you finally drinking the Kool-Aid?
Well, here's what I can say. When I was thinking about the Heisman this weekend, because I think I saw someone, I think it was someone in my family group chat who was like, Bryce Young, Heisman favorite for sure. And then I saw like someone throw out CJ Stroud, and obviously we'll get to him and his great weekend. But I can't forget about his early season, and I can't forget about Bryce Young just getting through a lot of clunkers here. And it's not like he's obviously a great quarterback, but it doesn't feel like any particular offensive player has separated themselves all that much. So I'm like, I feel like the years where the offensive side of the ball doesn't separate themselves from the pack, it should go to a defensive guy. Like, I think that should be the rule within the voting rights, where it's like,
I think that's sound logic.
Mm.
Like, it's just the Heisman is such this like perfect storm of, you know, formula of what makes a Heisman. He's got to have that Heisman moment. He's got to be on a contender. You know, he's got to play a prominent position, usually quarterback, maybe running back. We've seen, once or twice they go to a wide receiver. But it's basically a quarterback on one of the contenders every year. It's like just this such perfect formula. And in 2021, there's not really a quarterback that necessarily fits in that formula. Obviously, you got Stroud and Bryce Young have been, you know, they're on top three teams right now. But it feels like a cop out when you just when you're just looking. Oh, it's the quarterback on the one of the best teams. Yeah, obviously, give it to him. Because don't get me wrong, C.J. Stroud has had a great season. But I look at his team and it's like, well, he's like the fourth best player on that offense. Like they're just loaded with just stars. And while he's the quarterback and he puts up great stats, how can I say a guy's the best player in the nation if I don't think he's the best player on his team? So, and that's honestly the what I hesitate to go all in on Jordan Davis for the Heisman because I'm like, well, N'Kobe Dean might be the best player on Georgia's defense, right? Like Will Anderson should be a legitimate contender for the Heisman. Like these guys are incredible, and like you're saying, like there hasn't been that one offensive player that's just, you know, he's just dynamic. Like Joe Burrow, Johnny Manziel, like we just saw these guys. Derrick Henry just took games over. Like there hasn't really been that. I think Bryce Young would probably be my favorite right now. I felt like early on he was kind of doing the same thing CJ Stroud. He felt more like a game manager, like not disrespecting him, but it was just like, you have tight players, just get the tight players the ball and just and do your thing. It seems like the second half of the season, now they've gotten in some of these close games, you're actually seeing him have to make plays and run around and like show like just how impressive he is. I've definitely come a long way on my opinion of Bryce Young today than it was, you know, 2 months ago. So I think he might be the favorite. But yeah, I mean, I think Jordan Davis should get legitimate consideration. I mean, this Georgia defense, what they're doing is just absurd. And defense is just such a team award, but the fact that he's kind of the soul of that defense, it counts for something. Just because we haven't seen a defensive unit this good in a decade, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that counts for something.
I think that's fair. And I also just think it's like the defining it's something where when you look back 15 years from now, and if you saw Jordan Davis's name, you're like, oh yeah, do you remember that Georgia defensive season? That's why he won it, and that's why the Heisman that year went to a defender, was because Georgia's defense was just unlike anything else, especially for that era. Like Devontae Smith, we remember more than anything else, like what he was doing to opposing defenses. Joe Burrow on that run, you remember, oh yeah, that season. That's what I think the Heisman should ultimately be, is like that person. You just, they took everyone by storm during that season. You're just like, this was just incredible in what they were doing. Like that was the highlight of the season, the high of the highs, I guess.
I think that's a fair point. And I think the conference championship, because it is still so wide open, I think those conference championship games could go a long way in deciding it. You know, if Georgia just put up, you know, as good as Georgia's defense has been, you know, there's still some question from some people on how good all the offenses are they've played. You know, the SEC East isn't necessarily murderer's row by any means. So there's still some sort of question on, oh, is it the competition? Are they really this good? If you saw them come out in the SEC Championship and, you know, shut out Alabama, I'm not saying they're going to, but if they just did something absolutely extraordinary like that, I think that would really get, you know, boost the momentum of the Jordan Davis Heisman hype.
Or if Jordan Davis just takes over Bryce, right? Like if you have some shots of Jordan Davis just disrupting this offensive line and just terrorizing Bryce Young, that completely flips it.
Yeah, I definitely think it could. But yeah, right now, and especially CJ Stroud this weekend too, like Michigan State, we knew going in was the worst pass defense in college football, right? And that was even with kind of a weak schedule. Like they hadn't even played the juggernaut pass offenses yet, and they were still 130th. And CJ Stroud comes out and throws six touchdowns and 500 yards in two quarters, basically. Like it was impressive what he did, but I don't really feel like I learned anything from him, you know, dominating the worst pass defense in college football.
That's fair.
Like, I mean, Ohio State, we learned something about Ohio State for sure. Like they just straight blasted Michigan State. Like I felt like it was, you know, I think you had this question proposed. Is this more of an indictment on Michigan State, or is Ohio State really this good? I definitely think it's, you know, maybe 50-50. I think Ohio State's the clear number two team right now.
Well, we'll get to that.
But yeah, but Michigan State, I think they're a little on the overrated side.
Yeah, and I also think, if you have a strong, passionate CJ Stroud or Bryce Young take, then I'm just like, I don't think you've been watching the season. Like, that just tells me you, like, if you are more if you are passionate and you're like, they've just been the Heisman year, and I'm like, have you watched Matt Corral? Have you watched Kenny Pickett, Sam Hartman? Like, do you really think their seasons are all that different? Like, Grayson McCall's insane efficiency, and like, I just look up and I'm just like, I think they're all great. But like, if you really are trying to tell me that Kenny Pickett's year at Pitt is not any less impressive than what Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, I'm like, I don't know. And like what you said,
Kenny Pickett deserves way more legitimate consideration than a Matt Corral, honestly. Yeah. I think Matt Corral boosted his stats against the weak competition to start the year. I feel like as the SEC season has gone on, I feel like he's nowhere really close to that Heisman conversation.
Okay.
In my opinion.
That's fair. Well, let's get into our biggest takeaways of the weekend, Matt Green. So you're going to tie this into your stat of the weekend, the green line.
Yeah, so let me start it off with a stat of the weekend about the Alabama Crimson Tide. As we know, they beat Arkansas this weekend 42-35. That was their fourth one-possession game of the 2021 season.
Hmm.
You got to go back three seasons to find four one-possession games that Alabama's played. So 2018, 2019, and 2020 combined, Alabama played four one-possession games, and two of those were in the SEC championship game. So we're 11 games through the regular season, and Alabama's played as many one-possession games as the last 3 years combined, which we're just not used to. We're just used to Alabama just dominating everyone they played. So I thought that was an interesting stat over the weekend. And then, you know, I've hit the listeners multiple times with Dan Mullen's record versus Power 5 competition. Well, we know Dan Mullen was fired today. That's the big story of the day. And pre-Marco Wilson shoe throw, Dan Mullen was 29-6 at Florida. Since Marco Wilson threw that shoe, he is 5-9. And now he is no longer the head coach of the Florida Gators.
Did you see a statement where he talked about the two national titles?
Man, he's grouping himself in with those, huh?
He is. I mean,
that's fair. He was there.
But, like, that's not a thing coaches do. It's not a thing. That's a weird way of going out.
I'll be honest. I feel very vindicated.
I see a lot of Georgia fans are very vindicated about it.
Of Dan Mullen. I'll be honest. Like, I'm not dancing on the man's grave or anything, but I just felt like I was taking crazy pills. You know, I feel like I could see something, and a lot of Georgia fans saw this guy's a phony. You know, it's just there's just something about him that's just so unlikable. And I think after a while, so many people saw it, and it's like there was this narrative that he does more with less and all that, and it's like, yeah, he's a great play caller and he's an excellent offensive mind, but at the end of the day, as a head coach of a college football program, 50% of your job at least is about recruiting and getting the recruits, you know, on campus. So I think Mullen was just such a bad recruiter that Florida fans like question the university's ability to recruit, right? It's just like, well, you know, we don't spend the money. They almost convince themselves they're like a small market team, you know? It's like, well, yeah, but for what we're doing, who we can get, you know, we're doing a great job. Like, I think the right guy comes into Florida, I think this is going to be such a quick fix. Like, I think Florida is so ready to be back. Like, not ready now, but it's just not going to be that difficult to get Florida back. It's just if the guy is so unlikable, like that's it. You know, that's the smoking gun. That's why you can't recruit. Like, people just don't like you. That's like it's a simple thing. Well, you're going to bring in a guy that people like, you know, a Billy Napier, a Lane Kiffin. Like, it's going to be night and day. Florida is a powerhouse. We've never seen a combination, definitely not when you include Florida, but with Florida State and Miami being this bad at the same time. But we've definitely not seen all three of them be this bad at one time. But it's like the state is wide open. Like, I know everyone's coming into the Florida from all over the country to get talent, but there's still so much to go around. And the right guy can come in, and Florida will be a quicker fix than I think some might think.
Well, I mean, think about it with Mullen. His first 2 years, didn't he go to New Year's Six Bowls his first 2 years?
They lost four games, which, I mean, there's talk, you know, they gave up on McElwain kind of or whatever. But, yeah, that was a 4-7 team the year before Mullen got there. And then, yeah, it started off with 10-3 and then 11-2.
That's what scares me, is like I was rooting for Mullen to get one more year anyway. Like this makes the SEC East like a lot more volatile this offseason. We'll see. Like their recruiting's going to get hurt no matter what. This is pretty late in the process, and I don't know. I think Florida is going to be in some trouble there, but I don't know. I really have no idea what to make, because you see names popping up from all over the place, and we'll get to some of those. But like you mentioned, Napier. He's been waiting and very choosy to this point. I think that's probably, like, it would not be a flashy name, but I actually think that'd be a really, really smart fit. And I would like that.
I think that is flashy at this point. Like, maybe not mainstream. Everybody knows who he is, but I think his name is around there enough that seems like one of the top guys they want. And like you said, I think this is the kind of job Napier has been waiting patiently.
I mean, that would be interesting, but I'm rooting against them doing it right. And thankfully, I'm not sure Scott Strickland is the guy I want making this next hire. So I don't know where he's going to go. I think they're going to go CEO coach this time, though. They're going with the Mac Brown type. So I don't know where that will get. Like, the Bob Stoops stuff really speaks to me. Like, that would not surprise me whatsoever.
I don't think there's any chance of that.
Okay.
I mean, why would Bob Stoops come out of retirement for Florida?
So he coached in the XFL not too long ago. So he did take another job coaching football not too long ago. He's a Fox analyst. He obviously has strong ties to Florida, DC under Spurrier. I like, he's going back to Florida. It's not like you're coming out of retirement for Nebraska. For Indiana or something, it's Florida.
That's true.
I just wouldn't discount that. It just depends on the itch, right? It depends on how strong his itch is. Like, I mean, we just saw Urban.
How old is Bob Stoops?
He's only 61.
So is that a long-term hire? See, I think these days, I think you want the next guy. I think you want to get a young, up-and-coming guy. And, you know, Billy Napier, he doesn't necessarily have ties to Florida, so...
You know, I don't think that should matter. Urban didn't have ties, and then he went and won two national titles.
Maybe he could leave for another job if something bigger, or a Clemson opened up or something like that later down the road or something. Not like Kirby just going to Georgia and no one could convince Kirby to go anywhere from Georgia, you know? So you might not be able to find a candidate that perfect, but you're going to – I feel like it's better to get the younger guy, I think. And then Lane Kiffin's built in that Urban Steve Spurrier mold, like that Dan Mullen desperately wanted to pretend that he was built from. Like, I think that the Lane Kiffin hire is what would scare, I think, rival fan bases the most.
That's probably true. It just depends on, like, if Lane's ready to get back in the big game, because, like, he is a really good thing at Ole Miss. He is on a trajectory where he can win 8 to 9 games most years, have a 7-5 year, 6-6 every now and then, and they're happy. Like, the folks in Jackson are happy. You go to Florida, this is it. Like, there's no going back after that. Then you're an offensive coordinator for a while, and then that's probably, like, it's just going to be hard to get back on the top of the top after the runs at Oakland and USC and Tennessee and Ole Miss now. Like, I think he's already done the Alabama rehab. Like, you can't do that again and then get another head coaching job and start this process all over again. So I think if I'm Kiffin, I'm very careful about this next job, because I think it's the last big time Power 5 job I get in college football. So, I mean, do you think you can withstand the heat? Do you want it? Do you want to go to Florida? Like, I don't know. I think it would be a slam dunk hire, but I just don't know for him if he's ready to move on, because he really hasn't. I mean, he has not been at Ole Miss long at all now. So I don't know. I would be careful if I were him.
No, that's definitely true. And I think Ole Miss could be slightly on the underrated side. Like, I mean, Hugh Freeze, we're not that long ago from Hugh Freeze going to back-to-back New Year's Six games. Like, they were a good team back in 2014, 2015. So, like you said, like, he's come to Mississippi State. He's come to Ole Miss, and he's, like, the guy there. And it's not a Group of Five school. Like, it's a big-time SEC West program. Like, yeah, you might still have to go through Alabama to win the conference or to even win your division, but they're not that far from that. Like, you're saying, yeah, they're cool winning 8 and 9 games. It's like, if they could win 11 games this year. Like, they're one win away from a 10-2 regular season and a New Year's Six Bowl. Like, and this is year two, I wonder if Lane Kiffin would feel like I'm making the same decision right now of leaving Tennessee for USC if I left Ole Miss for Florida. You know, it's like he seems like the perfect candidate for Florida, but it feels like that X factor that his past decisions might prevent him from jumping ship super quickly.
That's fair. That's fair. But we'll see. We'll see what he wants to do. But he's going to have I just am curious how LSU is going to factor into all this, because LSU is a much better job. It's not even close. I don't think it's particularly close that LSU is a better job than Florida. I'm curious what that does to the options. Do they wait on LSU to make a move and then they figure out? Because like if I'm a coach, I'm waiting to see what LSU does before I talk to Florida. Like,
well, you got to think someone like Billy Napier, you know, he's currently at Louisiana, so he might not be from there or anything, but LSU has got to be his first choice, right? If he could. So if Florida offers you the job tomorrow, do you take it or you wait to see what LSU does, you know? So like, even from that perspective, so who is your favorite right now? Would you say Napier or Kiffin, or are you thinking someone else?
Are you asking who do I think they're going to pick, or who would I pick if I were Scott Strickland?
Either way, either one.
I think Strickland's going to focus on Bob Stoops. Strike out. Bob's going to flirt for a little bit, strike out, and then he goes like, I think Franklin's staying at Penn State. I think he'll call about Fickle, and then he'll wind up at like, I think he winds up at like Zach Arnett from Mississippi State, or Barry Odom from Arkansas.
You think Barry Odom could be the next coach at Florida?
I could. I don't think this is going to go as well.
No chance.
I'm not a Scott Strickland guy, and I don't think this is. I remember who it was before this. It was Jim McElwain. It was Will Muschamp. They've done Ron Zook. Like, it's not like you should.
Will Muschamp was like the hottest up and coming coaching candidate at that time, though. Like, he was the head coach in waiting at Texas and everything. Like, so Will Muschamp, I can't agree with you. That's just kind of hindsight. But McElwain, that was definitely out of left field. I didn't know much about McElwain when he got that job. But it's like Urban Meyer was also, you know, from Utah. And is that offense going to work down in the SEC? So there's all that talk. So.
Well, he said he wants a consistent winner. That's what he said in the presser. So, like, based on that, what I would do if I was Scott Strickland, my top three calls would be Matt Campbell one. I'm calling Campbell, and likable.
That seems more on par with what I'm thinking with for Florida.
I think that would be a slam dunk if they could pry Matt Campbell away. Like, that's the type of out of the box, like the Urban type thinking, where you need to be thinking not a SEC Florida person. You need to be thinking broader. And if you do go the SEC route, I think Kiffin is the safest of the SEC coaching tree type deal. You could be like, would you be concerned if Dan Lanning left Georgia for this job? Like, would you be like, oh no, oh, how do we replace him?
I mean,
what do we do here? I'm curious. I don't know the answer to that.
I probably wouldn't, just because Kirby Smart he's a defensive guy, and then you would have Schumann and Muschamp still on the staff. So like, if he had been the defensive coordinator the whole time Kirby had been there, then I might care a little bit more. But he's only been, I think this is his third year as the DC, so I don't think that would be that big of a deal. But I also don't feel like Florida's going to go a defensive guy. They just seem like they seem like that one of those teams that has to win a certain way. Like,
but see, I think they're going to go defense. If I had to bet, it's going to go defensive guy, because it flips. Look at this. You went from Mullen to McElwain to Muschamp to Urban to Zook, who was like
McElwain was an offensive guy.
Yeah, I guess he was. Yeah, but Muschamp wasn't. And then before Muschamp was,
I don't know what Zook
Urban
was, to be honest.
Well, I mean, he was a special teams after. Yeah,
he's not a very good coach.
Exactly. But you just see this in jobs.
I think if you're going with a proven guy, I think Campbell and Franklin seem like the best they could do.
Yeah, I don't think Franklin's leaving, though, based on the comments this week and what he said at the Touchdown Club a couple days ago.
That's true.
I think Franklin signing with CAA and Jimmy Sexton, I think he got some more money to stay in Happy Valley, which is also a top 10 job. So I just, like, if I'm leaving Penn State.
I don't know about that. Top 10?
Yeah, Penn State's top 10. Because you can win a national title at Penn State. You can still do that.
Yeah, you can. I don't know if it'd be top 10 if I start naming them. I'd say
good Florida's recruiting area. I think you can win at Penn State consistently.
No, you can, but I'd say third best program in the Pac, in the Big Ten.
Who do you have in front of them outside of Ohio State? I think that the number two program.
I'd say Michigan's
a No. Michigan doesn't have the talent base. No. Penn State's better
Michigan
job.
Michigan seems to recruit better consistently than Penn State.
I don't
State.
Think since Franklin's been there.
They're right there together, though. It's okay. Been a while for Michigan.
And then you have the paternal. I don't know. I like it's close, but I would still take Penn State as the number two job in the Big Ten. But yeah, okay, but you're strong, like, was that everything with the takeaways for you?
Yeah, those are my top takeaways of the weekend. Okay. Other than, and Oregon. And, yeah, Oregon's done.
Oregon's done, and
people,
I'm so glad about it.
I try to tell people every year, like, I just don't buy Mario Cristobal. The Pac-12 has just been theirs for the taking. Nobody else that's challenging on a national scale, like, they should – what is this? They've been to two playoffs. Oregon's not been to one, but the Pac-12 has been to two of the eight playoffs so far. It's like Oregon, with the competition, they should have been getting their Clemson on in the Pac-12 and just smoking through that. They should have been at least two or three playoff appearances to this point. And they just, like, every year they just don't get it done. So I feel like Cristobal, in my opinion, might be, like, number one most overrated coach in college football.
Well, he hires well. Like, that's the best thing about Cristobal and Mack Brown and guys like that. If you're going to have the CEO coach, you better hire well. And he does, like, Andy Avalos and then with Joe Moorhead. And, like, he knows how to hire coordinators. But he knows his strengths and weaknesses. But I think it's just more of, like, he didn't do enough in the portal. Like, Ty Thompson might be a good player in the future. But, like, going into the year with Anthony Brown and a true freshman and Thompson was just not a good move when you're trying to win a national title. And Anthony Brown was just never going to be good enough. Like, he just wasn't. Like, he's your back. Like, he's your fail safe. Like, Tennessee would have loved it. Like, we had our own Anthony Brown and Hendon Hooker, but, like, we're not gunning for national titles. We don't have national title talent. And I think them not doing more in the portal to shore up that quarterback room before the season turned out to be what did them in.
So you don't think Oregon has national title talent?
No, I'm saying they do. That's the difference with them in Tennessee. It's like you can't do that. You can't play this game that they did and be like, well, we can get the most out of Anthony Brown and he can get us there. It's like, no, he's Anthony Brown. Like he has a ceiling. Like you're not.
Well, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Not to catch you off there. But I've heard Cristobal. I almost said Cristobal. I've heard Cristobal's name mentioned multiple times. Like with Florida and Miami, like, do you think Cristobal would leave Oregon for anywhere else?
For Miami, yes. Florida, no. He has a lot of ties to that area.
The Nike thing with Oregon, like, I wonder if you, like, Oregon is in such an interesting spot. Like, I wonder if you view that as a destination job because we haven't seen anyone ever win a national championship there. Like, you've seen, what, two national championship appearances? So, like, theoretically, you have to say you can win a national title at Oregon, but they haven't competed as you know, regularly as you would like. But the Nike stuff, like the Nike money, I feel like that just has to go so far on like how good of a job this is, and it just comes to the facilities and everything they have. But I don't know. Miami just seems like such a different job than it was 20
well,
years ago.
Let's go ahead and throw this out. He's from Miami. He played for Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson at Miami. He started off as a grad assistant at Miami. Like,
but you got to make decisions with your head sometimes, not your heart.
I mean, it's really hard to say no to your home job. Like, it's just really hard if they come calling and offer a certain amount of money. And if he, like, wants to get out of the Pacific Northwest and his family's like, yeah, can we go back to Miami? Can we go back to the beach? Can we do that?
I wonder. I bet Eugene, Oregon's an awesome place to live as well.
Can I give you a Cristobal fact?
Especially if you're a millionaire.
But I mean, if you're from Miami, I don't know. I could see you being like, I'm good on Eugene. Can I give you a Cristobal fact?
Yeah.
So after this is from Wikipedia, so take this for all it's worth, but after his football playing career, Cristobal went through a two-year application process to become a U.S. Secret Service agent and was offered a job in 1998.
Wow. I could see that. He looks like he could be a Secret Service agent.
he changed his mind at the last minute and became a grad assistant at Miami. That's wild how different his life would have been.
He was real high up there. I don't know if you saw, someone on ESPN did a story like a year or two ago about head coaches in a wrestling tournament. And I think he did pretty well. I think there's a North Texas coach, I forget his name.
Seth Luttrell.
I think he's like a multi-time like state wrestling champion or something. He's like super diesel, but he was everyone's number one. But Cristobal was up there.
I don't think I was ever described as super diesel growing up.
Josh Heupel was just a step below Cristobal, I think.
That's not wasn't necessary. he won a national title.
That looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Josh Heupel won a national title, sir.
As a player.
He did. As a player. He unlocked Drew Locke.
He looks very different now than he did as
No,
a player.
he looks as good as ever.
21 years ago.
No, he looks fine. Man, Josh, you look fine.
21 years since Oklahoma's won a national title, by the way. That's a long time. I'm a Georgia fan over here. I know 1980's been thrown in my face a lot, but 2000 wasn't as recent as it actually seems.
Matt, it's hard to win a national title. You go through the last 100 years. Not a lot of teams have won national titles. Not a lot. Sure. Like, it's tough. It's a tough thing. The best thing you can hope for is just consistency and being in the conversation. That's all you want, is to be in the conversation year over year. Last coaching thing. Now that Sark and the Texas Longhorns are not going bowling, I think he's off to the worst first year start of any Texas coach in like a preposterous amount of time. I forgot which coach's name popped up there, and I was like, that's not a real person. Which tells you all you need to know about how long ago it was that someone started this poorly, that it sounded like a made up television character. This is bad.
Week McKenzie or something.
Yeah, it's really bad. And I wanted to combine this with Jeff Collins, because it is Georgia Tech week for you. And these two coaches, different trajectories at this point. Jeff Collins is quietly in year four, correct? This is year four.
Is that right?
It's year four, I think, isn't it?
I wasn't thinking he'd been there that long. I'll pull that up.
It is year three at the absolute earliest. I thought this was year four, but I could be wrong.
This is year three.
Okay, he got the job in 2018, I guess. Okay. So he's going into year four. He's local, from Conyers, went to Rockdale, all that's cool. You got blown out 55-0, and this is going to lead into my tweet that I tweeted out that I sent to you, and I sent my family group chat into a tailspin revealing this news about Notre Dame. But Jeff Collins getting blown out 55-0, looking awful, 9-24 to this point, making $3 million a year at Tech. He seems like a really likable dude. He's trying. I don't have the podcast to fall back on with this, but I remember at the time telling people, I was like, oh, this is a disaster. He's doing what? He's going to try and out recruit Georgia? He's going to go one-on-one? What? I think y'all are in for a rude awakening. Paul Johnson got you to the Orange Bowl. Paul Johnson was like, hey, I can't recruit. I can't do any of this. We're just going to double down on what I can do, and we're going to annoy the crap out of people and go on these random 10-2 runs. And that's a more winnable formula at Georgia Tech than the style of, we're just going to be Clemson. We're going to be Georgia.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with you.
Okay.
Here. First of all, I'm going to put myself on blast.
Okay.
Because I was a believer in Jeff Collins. Not that I thought he was going to bring Tech back to glory or anything, but I was a believer that they were going, that just the way I heard him talk about Georgia Tech, the way he viewed Georgia Tech as a like a destination job, and the fact that he was there when Saban got the job at Alabama, and he worked at Tech as a grad assistant. He just had a lot going for him. And I've also felt like the biggest problem I've had with Georgia Tech in recent years is they don't rep Atlanta enough. Like, that's one of the best sales pitches they have going for them. So the fact that Jeff Collins was the first guy in like that I can remember actually, you know, marketing Atlanta and everything like he has, like, I thought that's the biggest reason I was buying into Jeff Collins. But I'm afraid it might be a situation of Jeff Collins had to die so Georgia Tech can live kind of thing. Because you had to get out of the Paul Johnson era. Like, they were good every like 5-6 years, but like Georgia Tech is not just some like cupcake that's like never good at football. Like, it's not that long ago that Georgia Tech was consistently good in the ACC. So while they might not be able to go head to head with Georgia, like Steve Spurrier built South Carolina on getting that second and third tier talent out of the state of Georgia. Like Kentucky's always James Franklin at Vanderbilt. They were constantly the middle pack of the SEC was constantly poaching the third tier talent out of the state of Georgia. So there was no reason Auburn has always gotten some of those players that Georgia didn't recruit as heavily. So I feel like if Georgia Tech could start getting the 20th to 40th best players in the state, like that's enough to make them competitive. And so you haven't seen the tangible results of that, but if you can just have a program that's, you know, got Adidas and they have a legitimate uniforms now and they actually look like a ACC program now, unlike the Paul Johnson era, like he might have bridged the gap. He might not be the guy to do it, but Georgia Tech might not be as irrelevant of a college football program when the next guy's taken over.
Maybe. I'm a believer in the claw offense. I'm a believer in coaches at like this. I don't want to say smaller market, but it's kind of like that's how I view a lot of college football programs now, is that like I look at it under the terms of like, okay, or I guess through the lens that like, okay, Tennessee is not in a state that has the kind of like Pruitt literally just stopped recruiting Tennessee. Like he was like, we're going elsewhere. I'm going to get people from all over the country, all that kind of stuff. We're not locking down the state. Hypo comes in. They're like, we're locking down the state, and has Jerry Mack going to Memphis and like Rodney Gardner, like all this kind of stuff. Two totally different philosophies. I think Hypo's is more sustainable because you can lock down Tennessee. You have a system that like you can fall back on if you don't have the players. Like anybody can play in this kind of scheme. Jeff Collins is a CEO coach, and if you watch a lot of Georgia Tech games, their scheme's not great. Dave Patnod, I'm just not sure, is a good offensive coordinator. They haven't figured out the quarterback stuff. Jeff Sims is okay. Yates might be good in a year. I don't think the way they play, they don't really have an identity. They don't really do enough. Like, if you're going to be the CEO type coach, you need to be Mack Brown. Immediately come in there, recruit your tail off, like, hire the right offensive mind and Jeff Lebby. Lebby's with Kiffin. What is the guy who was also at Ole Miss? What is his name? He was with Rich Rod and at Ole Miss and Matt Luke. Why am I blanking on his name? Phil Lambeau?
Sure.
But either way, he was like, we're going to high octane, throw the ball over the place, air raid type, and we're hiring the Army defensive coordinator. Jay Bateman, or whatever his name is. And they were really, really good right away. Georgia Tech has to pick something. Like, it doesn't have to be the triple option, but you got to have the coastal look. You got to have the air raid. Some variation of the air raid. I don't think they're never going to get enough of a recruiting cycle over a four-year span to play the type of style that it looks like that they're trying to do. Like, Notre Dame just beat the living crap out of them on Saturday, and they're nowhere near competing. Like, they're nowhere near, because Notre Dame's basically an ACC school. Like, we could just call, even though they won't go back to the conference full-time, they're playing a lot of ACC teams, Notre Dame's an ACC school. They're the best team in the ACC this year. And
right in the heart of Big Ten country and the Atlantic coast.
Right. But my broader point is like that was the measuring stick of like where they are year three and like where they've got to go. And this brings us back to like Sark, where it's like, oh,
Before you leave Georgia Tech, I think Georgia Tech, Paul Johnson did to Georgia Tech exactly what Dan Mullen did to Florida, but on different scales. Like, he recruited so bad that Florida fans forgot that they even had the ability to recruit well. It's like, yeah, just get a guy who's not a douche and you'll start getting good players again. I promise. Like, it's not going to be that hard. Like, a guy who, you know, brings new energy to the program. But with Georgia Tech, it's like you're running a 1940s offense for a decade and people just forgot about you in the Southeast. Like, there's no reason an ACC program right in the heart of college football, like, country, basically, Atlanta, Georgia, like, there's no reason why that program can't be successful and get, you know, three-star recruits coming out of the state of Georgia to go to Georgia Tech. Like, that's all it would take to start getting them relevant. Like, I don't feel like it's – like, people talk about the academics, like – that's a total overrated storyline in my opinion. Like, in the 90s, Georgia Tech was really good, like, a lot of years. Like, they won a national championship in 1990, a split national title. But so it's like they could recruit enough to get players, you know, their classes, whatever. There was things for the players to take, classes for the players to take in the 90s. I'm sure they can still find plenty of people who can take classes at Georgia Tech. It's not like everyone has to take – you know, some sort of smart major that I can't even come up with off the top of my head that happens at Georgia Tech, you know. So I always think that's an overblown just narrative that they don't have the ability to get players at Georgia Tech.
Okay.
Like, Northwestern and Stanford can get good players. Like, Georgia Tech can get good players. I guess Northwestern doesn't get that good of players, but point remains the same. Stanford gets good players. Georgia Tech, the talent in the state of Georgia is so much better than those areas.
But to bring it back to Sark, too, is that, like, I don't think his seat's warm. It's been a crazy, crazy season. Like, just all-time worst luck in a lot of ways, and just some crazy off-the-field stuff involving monkeys and everything else. It's just been a season you want to forget, and you want to get past this. Sark's going to recruit. Sark, I still think, is one of the best offensive minds in college football. I think this is all pretty bad. But I just can't quit that, even though with all the embarrassing losses, because I've just seen how good of an offensive mind he is and seen what he did at Washington and what he was on his way to doing at USC. Like, I don't know. I just don't think that guy's gone. And I just... Texas is just weird. Like, there's something in the water. I don't understand why Texas just can't get out of its own way to this point, but I'm just curious from your perspective. Do you think he should be on the hot seat just because it's Texas? And that's why I was comparing the difference with Georgia Tech and Texas, is that, like, Texas is one of the few jobs where it's like you should have an extremely short leash because of the recruiting area, because of the program, because of what you can easily do in one cycle, like, come in and win right away with those players. Like, USC gave, part of the reason we were all so fresh over USC was like, Clay Helton's fine, but, like, you're USC, you can do better. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, you should not be, like, in what you said with Florida, it's like, you're Florida, you're USC, you're Texas. And it's like, if Texas thinks that, like, if they go 4-8, if Texas really does, like, I'm okay with firing him, because it's like, you're Texas. That's not
so
acceptable.
You're okay with firing Sarkisian this year?
If they go 4-8, like, I would, like, it would be tough to eat, but everyone's eating a bunch of buyout money. Like, everybody is.
No.
And
if they fired Sarkisian this year, Texas is, like, no longer a top 10 job in college football, honestly.
Okay.
Like, that's so absurd if they were to fire him after year one. Like, everyone just knows all that goes into college football and just how recruiting is just the lifeblood of the sport. And you're at such a disadvantage in this early signing period era now when you take over. Like, you're not as – especially now with the transfer portal. Like, you're as unprepared as ever to be good year one, you know? And it's like, if Texas is just going to – you know, just fire a coach every time they have a bad season, like, you're not going to find a good coach that's going to want to go there. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I think, honestly, if they fired him next year, I think it could have that sort of result, that it's just no one wants to touch that job. Like, I think Florida is kind of in a position similar to that, with, you got Muschamp 4 years, but he had two losing seasons, I believe. And then McElwain wins two SEC East, or goes to the SEC Championship both of his first 2 years, and then gets fired year three. Mullen had a lot of success and then gets fired year four. But it seems like there's personality things off the field going on with Mullen and McElwain. But if you just get to the point where you're this school that just fires a coach every 3 or 4 years, I think after a while that has a lasting impact. And coaches aren't that excited to take that job. So no, I think if someone were to suggest he's on the hot seat this year, I think that's just insanely premature.
Do you know why Jeff Collins is not getting fired this offseason?
Why is that?
He's on a 7-year contract.
Yeah, so he's somewhere like Georgia Tech. Like, that might be legitimate. They're like, we'd rather have a lame duck coach than pay the money for a buyout.
Oh, my gosh. It's not going anywhere. I don't think it gets fixed. But maybe you're right that he had to fall for the next one to rise.
Yeah, you got to bring him back to the 21st century, and then maybe someone can do something with that job.
Well, let's get into...
He's a big Waffle House guy, by the way.
Aren't we all? What is your go-to Waffle House order?
Oh, you know, I'm an all-star special. You know, no big deal.
So. Can you do that in one sitting? How do you feel after an all-star special?
I'll be honest. The last time I got an all-star special, I did eat like half of it. I used to go to Waffle House way more. Mm-hmm. I probably haven't been to Waffle House in like a year.
Oh, you didn't even go during the playoff run.
No, honestly, I should have. I felt like I wasn't doing my part, but the Braves still got it done.
That's true.
But yeah, go with the all-star hash browns. What, covered and chunked?
What? Is that what it is? Smothered and covered?
Ham and cheese.
Okay, covered and chunked.
And then,
do you like ham? Are you a ham guy?
It's like, yeah, I don't mind some ham.
Okay, are you ham or turkey?
It's got little chunks, the little cube.
I know what you're talking about.
Cheese. Yeah, that's quality.
Oh, no, that's not quality.
Bacon, eggs. Ugh. Waffle, the blueberry waffle. I don't even know if they have it anymore. I know they got rid of it and they brought it back. I don't know if it's still there. Blueberry waffle's where it's at, though.
I don't disagree. Are you a pancake or waffle person?
I'm to quote Office Space, Michael Bolton. You know, mm-hmm. Kind of like them all.
Oh man, now I'm hungry.
I'd probably go waffle though if I had to choose.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. We'll get into some Thanksgiving stuff on the Wednesday show. We still have one more show before Thanksgiving, so we'll save some Thanksgiving takes for that. Let's get into our pick'em recap this weekend. Matt Green, how did we do?
How did we do, sir? So, I think I've locked this thing up for the season, I will say. Mm. Your boy went 9-2 overall.
Mm.
This weekend, just 6-5 against the spread. You, sir, went 6-5 overall, but just 4-7 against the spread. So you were not making the listeners any money this weekend. And Zeus, also home dog of the week, Stanford, did not pay out. I think what did they lose by 30? That was a Cal absolutely blew the doors off Stanford this week.
So. I didn't get to my tweet real quick, so I want to touch on this. So Peter Burns of ESPN tweeted this earlier, and this is what like made me like start putting the wheels together on like how this works. But like going into the playoff picture and everything, Notre Dame finishes with Stanford this weekend. So Notre Dame is in all likelihood finishing 11-1. No conference title game. They're only lost to Cincy. Peter Burns said, quote, Notre Dame decision to stay independent rather than join the ACC is going to cost them a playoff bid this year. Both a loss for the Irish and the ACC, who should have fought for more than one year membership in 2020. No champ game plus a home to home loss versus Cincy is a double whammy. Okay. None of that is true. Let me just go ahead and drop that. Like Notre Dame did not like Notre Dame staying independent keeps them in the playoff for years and years to come. And especially when it expands, like Notre Dame, you can just go ahead and pencil in for the playoff once we expand to 12 every year forever. Like just go ahead and pencil them in 1-12 somewhere in there. Like they are going to be in there as long as Brian Kelly is running things. So they're fine. And them not losing to Clemson potentially every year, or them avoiding some of those pitfalls, a weird pit team in the ACC title game. Guess what? Georgia might not even benefit, like, if the tables were turned a little bit by having to play Bama in this SEC title game. The idea that staying independent hurts Notre Dame, just factually not true. Also,
yeah, I definitely agree with that. And on top of the fact that, like, this year's schedule is pretty weak,
mm-hmm.
but for the most part, Notre Dame playing the national schedule that they do, like, they usually have a pretty solid schedule, too. Like, there's multiple ranked teams. I think this is probably one of the weaker schedules. Like, people love to hate on them for... a variety of reasons, but usually their schedule is pretty legit. So, yeah, I mean, if you're I think this year, though, the conference championship will prevent them from, or the lack of conference championship will prevent them from not being in control of their own fate. Like, I think Oklahoma State, I think if they run the table, mm-hmm. I think Oklahoma State would eventually jump Notre Dame and be a one-loss Big 12 champion. But if all those Big 12 teams end up with two losses, which is probably the most likely thing to happen. Well, I guess Oklahoma still has one loss too, but the committee hates Oklahoma this year.
The committee is not putting one loss Oklahoma in over one loss Notre Dame.
I don't think so. But you know what's kind of interesting is Oklahoma State's ranked higher than Oklahoma, but don't you think beating Oklahoma is a better win than beating Oklahoma State? So like Oklahoma State has the potential to play Oklahoma and win. It's like, oh, well, they beat Oklahoma. That's a good win. But if Oklahoma beats Oklahoma State, it's like, well, that's Oklahoma State. Yeah, I mean, they're in the Big 12. That's
right.
Fine.
That's what you do.
Yeah, so I feel like Oklahoma State actually has an advantage from that perspective. Hmm. But I think if they went, I think Oklahoma, so you don't think Oklahoma State would jump Notre Dame?
I don't, because I think what people, the unfortunate part of this too, is that ratings matter. That ratings and storylines matter. And if they are poised, or they're faced with an opportunity of picking between Notre Dame's national audience versus Oklahoma State, they're picking that. Like, if you were given the opportunity,
though, the audience doesn't matter. Like,
it does. They think about it.
They're gonna get good ratings. Like, especially
no, they're not.
Georgia,
like, because they're blowouts, like, and they have to think about this stuff. And I do think they do.
You shouldn't have to think about this stuff. That's not a good reason. That's a good reason for multiple networks to be involved in the playoffs.
Well, so the networks are having conversations about it, is what I'm saying. So they're like, that is factored in. Like, whether we like it or not, that is factored in. Ratings and narratives are factored into this.
I don't know about that. I think the fact that they have one loss, the one, they're Notre Dame. There's just that bias that goes.
That's what I'm saying. They're getting the benefit of the doubt.
But I know I'm not saying a bias of, you know, they're going to give them preferential treatment, or I'm saying bias of just they seem like a better brand, not like you're making a data decision or anything. You're more inclined to believe that they're legitimate because they're Notre Dame. They have strong tradition. But also this year, their only loss is to another team that you have in the playoff. So
right.
that's a quality, you know, argument, I guess, for if you want to bring up quality losses. But they don't have, like, Wisconsin. Like, that's the best win on their whole schedule. Like,
I mean, Wisconsin looks like a good win now.
If Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And then beats Baylor in the conference championship. Like, that's way more than...
I don't disagree.
Just that resume alone would put them in over Notre Dame, I think.
Well, my broader point was that I don't think that's happening anyway. Like, I don't think that that's... I think
Oklahoma
that,
State?
Yeah, and I don't
that's
think...
probably true.
All Notre Dame needs is one of the Big 12 to cannibalize itself a little bit. They needed Oregon to lose. They got that. And then, I mean, if Ohio State takes care of Michigan and then Wisconsin, I mean, even if and then Georgia beats Bama, they're in. Like, that's it. Like, they're just in because they don't have to get another blemish on their record. They, even if Cincinnati goes down, they're automatically in. Like, that's just
well, but
done.
I mean, at this point, Bama beating Georgia keeps Notre Dame out.
Correct. So, that's what they can't have. That's the doomsday scenario.
That's really the only thing that can't happen for them to not get in. Because you're not putting in one loss Notre Dame over one loss Georgia.
Correct.
Honestly, I think this weekend, I think Oregon losing made the SEC champion, made Georgia in regardless. I don't think there's a scenario where Georgia can really not make the playoff now.
Unless they get absolutely blown out. Like, Alabama just beats them 49-7 or something. But I don't even think that's going to, like, that's just not happening.
That could be true, but then you're deciding at the craziest scenario is... what, Oklahoma State? You putting in Oklahoma State, Big 12 champion over Georgia, or Notre Dame over Georgia? That's what the decision comes down to.
And we're all dumb at that point. We're like, we all know that none of those are true. Like, we both all know. Like, that's
college
not...
football, it's this weird... Yeah. The rankings are this weird combination of eye test / deserving. Like, you just kind of... We all know how the sport works. Number 10 loses to number 5. They have to go down. I'm not really sure why, but this is just how the polls work.
Mm. Well, my end point, we'll get to the games, is if I had to, like, my thing right now, if I could just throw all the money out in the world, I would just throw a bunch at UGA Notre Dame 1-4 and Ohio State versus Cincy 2-3 for the playoff. That's my guess is what we get. And then I just want Ohio State, Georgia.
Strong Midwest vibe in that playoff.
It's not bad. But I want to, my main thing is like, I don't even care about that one. I just want to ensure, because those playoff first round games are usually duds anyway, I care about getting Ohio State, Georgia in the championship. That's all I want. That is what I want. That is, I want to see the best offense versus the best defense.
Duds. That's why you got to make sure you're getting the four best teams as best you can. You can't worry about ratings and such nonsense like you're talking about over here.
Well, where were you going first in the pick'em recap?
Well, we got to start off with the game of the week, right? Ohio State absolutely taking Michigan State to the woodshed. Yeah, this three-headed monster of Ohio State's receivers is just absolutely absurd. I said it to you a couple weeks ago, Chris Olave might be their third best receiver. Like, he legit might be their third best receiver, and he might be a first-round pick. Like, this team's insane. Travion Henderson, just, they absolutely just destroyed Michigan State this weekend. Like, I felt like Michigan State was on the overrated side, but, like, I'm not taking anything away from Ohio State. Like, they straight up dominated. They look, I'm glad to see them jump Alabama in the AP poll. I think they're definitely going to jump them in the playoff rankings this week. I think Ohio State's the clear number two team right now.
I would agree. From 11 Warriors, quote, with Ohio State up 49-0 at halftime, which is still just preposterous that we cannot understate enough or overstate enough, I guess.
I mean, Georgia's up 49-0 at halftime this week. It's not a big deal.
It's true. Charleston, Southern, Michigan State, they're one and the same. CJ Stroud had already broken an Ohio State record by completing 17 consecutive passes and tied an Ohio State record by throwing 6 touchdown passes, all in the first half. Like, that is just... Mel Tucker in this group, we knew, I think we talked about it before the game, was like, the defense is just not good. And the offense has been carrying him, but then Ohio State's defense stepped up, and then it's just the recipe for disaster. And Ohio State knew. Haskell Garrett of the Buckeyes said before the game, quote, we're going to whoop their ass. And that is what happened.
End of quote.
End of quote, yes.
Yeah, and that's what I think you've seen with the Minnesota game and the Oregon game. Like, they were just getting torched on the ground. Basically, every team they've played since then has been very committed to the run, and none of them have been able to run. Like, every game, it's like 30-something carries for 50, 60 yards. Like, I think what was Michigan State was 21 for 66. Like, yeah, Kenneth Walker, a lot of people probably the front runner for the Heisman going into last week. 6 carries for 25 yards, like, just couldn't get him going at all. Like, Ohio State's much improved defensively.
Absolutely. Where are we going next?
Wake Forest, Clemson. Another one of these games where the unranked team was favored, and Clemson showed you why. This is going to be the worst. Like, this crazy ACC season. Like, I'm going to feel for the rest of the ACC. Like, Clemson's just dominated this conference for, like, what, 7 years in a row or something now? Then they have this terrible season, and by the end of it, if Wake Forest loses to who do they finish with? NC State next week. If they lose to NC State, Clemson's back in the ACC. Like, it's crazy. Like, Pitt's already there waiting, but yeah, it was good to finally see Wake Forest, or to finally see Clemson scoring some points. Will Shipley little jump pass. Till this day, I don't know why everyone does the jump pass. Like, what's so great about the jump pass? Like, I don't get it. But
Tebow's good at it.
It works sometimes. Tebow's like, oh, I need to make sure I don't travel. I got to get rid of it. Like, it was just such a weird play. I think Kerryon Johnson, I think, did it too at Auburn. It's just, we saw it this weekend with Arkansas and Alabama too. But yeah.
I think Joe Milton did it in one game earlier this season. I could be wrong.
It's just such a funny play. It makes me laugh every time I see it.
It's funny you bring up Clemson, because Clemson is not even ranked right now. And I think it's just David Hale, a good ESPN writer, he tweeted out, Clemson is 8-3. Its losses are to number 1, number 17, and 2 overtimes to another 8-3 team on the road. FPI has the Tigers at 10th. SPS Plus from our good friend Bill Connolly over there at ESPN.com. Great college football writer. Looking at 2 of his books on my shelf right now. Or I think maybe one. It's just one, but could be wrong. Has them 8th. that they continue to be ranked is just insane. And I agree with him. Like, I think Clemson is just like, there's just like this anger at Clemson for just their dominance as being the best college football program in the last 10 years. And now it's like we've gone too far the other way where it's like,
no. To be fair, they're what, 26th? And I think in the AP, like, they're getting out. But there is what, who is it? A&M is 8-3, mm-hmm. Utah 8-3, Wisconsin 8-3, NC State 8-3. But obviously, NC State's got that head to head. And then you got Arkansas at 7-4.
Yeah.
Still 25th. But it's like, that's why the polls are so. Are this weird thing, because Arkansas is 7-4 and they've lost to number one and number three, and who else they lose to? Ole Miss, mm-hmm. Ole Miss number eight. So they've played three top. Like, honestly, Arkansas would win the Pac-12. Like, you can't convince me Arkansas wouldn't beat every single team in the Pac-12, and they might beat every single team in the Big 12 too. Like, Arkansas's schedule is just absurd. Like, oh, and then I think they lost to Auburn, I think is the fourth loss on there. So they are 7-4, but three of those are the current top 10 teams, and all three of those top 10 losses were all on the road as well. But I was surprised to see Clemson not creep back into the top 25.
Well, I think the biggest thing is Clemson's going to be fine. Like, Clemson is going to be fine.
Little old Clemson. They don't want to vote him in the top 25. My buddy said, my buddy had a funny joke where he said, I bet Dabo wishes he still had his coach's poll vote. that may have been enough to get him in there.
The Wake message boards were right. Remember what I mentioned? That they were like, we love to have a vanilla offense. And for whatever reason, Clemson is just like, Clawson's like, we're not beating Clemson. And that's what happened here. He was like, we're not beating Clemson. We're just not doing it. They tried to warn us. I should have gone. Did I go Clemson? I don't even remember now. I think I did go Clemson.
No, we both went Wake Forest.
Did we? Okay.
Yeah. Idiot.
Do you know what it was? It was the Sam Hartman, the Sam Hartman attractiveness type deal, where we were lost in the eyes.
Is that why you picked it? I can assure you that's not why I picked it.
I don't know. You mentioned that Tori was in. The sports renaissance woman is in. Like, that's part of the deal here.
Oh, by the way, Tori, who loves listening to the pod.
Oh, did she listen this weekend?
She said a phrase that I say all the time to her.
Uh-huh.
She had a phrase that I say, and it was like, hey, can I share a stat with you? It's uh-huh. Like, hey, share this. Can I share this nugget with you? This recruiting? Hey, can I tell you something about? Like, that's what I always say. I'm just like, hey, we're just sitting there. How can I share this stat about Kirby Smart with you? And she's and she just absorbs all the information. The stuff she does care about and she doesn't care about, she just remembers all of it. It's insane.
Wait, so I have a follow-up question to that. Does that mean, like, when you say, can I share this with you? If she says no, do you like, is it more of a rhetorical type deal, or are you actually asking whether or not she's cool with you sharing this fact that's probably coming out no matter what?
It's more rhetorical, but it's mm-hmm. also like she's reading, and so it's like, I'll let her get to a good stopping point, and then I'll share. So I'm not interrupting what you're doing.
Oh my goodness. I could see that. Matt the stack guy. Just he's ready. You're just like, your knees shaking on the chair, and you're just like,
look at my fantasy matchup this week. I need 8 points to win. Check it out, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so, she's like, sure. Wow, that's great.
She's like, wow, great job, champion. She's so proud of me after my basketball championship this past year.
I just do bits around the house. I think that's what my the sports renaissance woman would say about me, is that I do bits a lot. I'm a big bit guy. I'd love to keep like a straight face and just do a bit and see how long it takes for her to figure out I'm doing a bit.
Yeah, that'd be annoying. That sounds terrible.
Well, if you remember anything,
we're not in a relationship, so whatever works for you, you and yours.
I love a good bit, man. Love a good bit. And so did the good folks at the University of North Georgia. They loved my bits. SMU versus Cincy. Is that where we're going next?
Yeah, that was a real statement win by Cincy this week, and I thought it's, like we said, it's just SMU, but it was one of the bigger speed bumps on their schedule. So for them to finally win a game, next to Notre Dame, probably the best team they've played so far, and to win in convincing fashion, I thought is definitely what they needed, because the polls the rankings are working out, or you're not going to be able to keep them out of the playoff. Now you're just making the committee feel good about putting you in the playoff.
Yeah, I this was also goes back to what you said, right? Where I agreed about, like, when people are freaking out about Cincy's spot, and we're like, they're fine. Like, Cincy is fine. Like, where they're at, like, if they just went out, they're in. And
exactly. There was so much head-to-head ahead of them that had to happen. Like, just relax. Like, it's the highest you've ever ranked a group of five team, and you feel like you're being disrespected. Like, just relax. There's, like, 5 weeks of the season left. Like, and here they are.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fine. Jamie Plunkett, Frogs in War, said this because this matters with Sonny Dykes, because he seems like a foreground conclusion at TCU, it seems like. And if I was TCU, do you know who I'm going? Do you know who I'm going if I'm TCU?
Sonny Dykes?
No. Primetime. Deion Sanders.
Honestly, that's a good call.
I want to go outside the box. Someone needs to do this. Like, that dude is going to recruit his tail off. He's especially got Jackson Dallas State period. In the top 100 in 247. Top 100 from the
without
SWAC.
Without a doubt, because he was just that name, you know, like when Georgetown hires Patrick Ewing or something, it's like, well, yeah, can he coach? So you had to know that he could coach first.
But now we know he can coach.
Exactly. I think the sky's the limit, really. Like,
I think Florida he's State, just a sleeping
if TCU
giant.
If doesn't take him, like, Florida State should consider it, because he's a I would be a believer in prime time.
I agree. Like, I love Deion Sanders, and I love the message, and I love the upbeat style. His whole thing, he said after the game, they beat Alcorn, and it was like 58,000 sold out. Like, he's got everyone excited. They're going to be in the SWAC championship, and they're good. They're dominant, and he talked about, like, if we have a championship season but no one gets drafted, then this wasn't a great year. Like, he's trying to get dudes drafted. Like, his pitch is like, we're gonna win football games, yeah, that's for conclusion, but I want to get dudes to the league. And I just think that translates so well into the modern game. And you put him in, like, Dallas, or you put him at Texas, like, I don't care where you put him, but you put him in a Power 5 job, I think Deion's gonna win. And I think Deion, if my choice is between Sonny
Dykes, I think TCU is like the perfect, like, storm for that. It's like big enough but like not big enough at the same time. Like, it's not a blue blood, not even close to being a top 25 job, I wouldn't say, but it's in a Power 5, well, what we once called Power 5 conference. It's in Dallas, Fort Worth. Like,
he fits the demographic too. Like, he's really religious. Like, he's someone who, like, he's really passionate about his faith. And, like, guess what? Texas Christian. I'm telling you.
His kids, where they went to high school, was in, like, that Dallas, Fort Worth area, right?
I think so. So that's what I'm saying. Like, if I'm TCU, Sonny Dykes, who now during his time at SMU, which brings us back the reason I brought up Sanders. So Sonny Dykes at SMU, he is 7-13 against teams 500 or better. He's 3-7 against top 25 opponents. Like, he'd probably be fine, but, like, take a big swing. I would take a big swing on Deion if Deion's interested in interviewing. I would take a bigger, like, he is boom or bust, but, man, after Gary Patterson, I would switch it up. I would see what happens. You're going into the brave new world without Texas and Oklahoma. I would go prime. I would throw the book at prime.
I can see it. I wouldn't hate that at all.
Where are we going next?
Our SEC game, Arkansas and Alabama. 20.5-point favorite Alabama was. Neither of us got this one right. This was an incredible game. Like, I don't think any of us saw this being this good of a game. Like, Arkansas just went blow for blow, really. It seemed like, you know, at the end of the first half, when Alabama was able to get that score before the half and then start the third quarter, make it 31-14, it was like, okay, Arkansas, you gave them a good game, but, you know, this is over now. And then they just responded. They just kept hitting Alabama with big plays in the passing game. And KJ Jefferson, like, this is probably the best game we've seen KJ Jefferson play. So I was really impressed with Arkansas, but this Alabama offense is just, it's next level. Like, Bryce Young, I feel like you're seeing him, like, just how far he's come from the start of this year to where he is now. And Jameson Williams, it's just absurd. This Ohio State receiving core, this three-headed monster that's just absurd. Like, Jameson Williams should be on Ohio State right now. Like, that, I think you'd have to say he's been the biggest transfer portal acquisition of the college football season, probably. Like, he's just been a star for Alabama. So this, like, that one throw he made, Bryce Young made, was just on that, was like an 80-yard touchdown. That was just, that was pretty.
Mm. There you go. Did you see the calls that people were getting really upset about during this game? Like, some of the calls that were going against Arkansas and in favor of Bama. Did you feel like it was not fairly officiated?
Well, there was, I feel like there was those couple right there in a row, but I can't remember all of them. Because one of them was that long touchdown that they said he was, you know, just short. They
right.
reviewed it and said he was just short. I felt like that was close enough. I didn't feel like it was really conclusive, but whatever. And then the next play was just weird. Like, the entire guy's body got in the end zone, and then they ruled him down at the ones. That was weird, but I can't remember all of the specific plays, but I don't know. It's hard to get into the Alabama officiating stuff. Like, I know people have such opinions on that, but who knows, really?
Mm. This comes from Hog Sports, that I think is important when you look at this if you're an Arkansas fan. And this year as a whole, man, just been a delight and really exciting if you're a Hog fan. Alabama beat Arkansas by a combined total of 100-10 over the last 2 years, and 8 of the last 9 games have been decided by 2 or more scores. So after a decade of just getting blown out by the Crimson Tide, you were close, and you're like, Pittman's doing some stuff. But I think a lot of this, man, unfortunately with Pittman, because he's a CEO type coach, is that he's gotta keep these coordinators. He's gotta keep Briles and Odom, and if he doesn't, then he's gonna have to hire correctly.
Yeah, it could be. But if he's a good CEO, then he's got his next guy, you know, an idea of who his next guy is. So I think you gotta be just insanely happy with where Arkansas is right mm-hmm. now. If you're an Arkansas fan, like, at 7-4, you know, with Missouri next week, I know that's a quote unquote rivalry game, the border war, whatever they call it exactly. Mm-hmm. Missouri lost their
border. Wait, the border game. War was Kansas, Missouri.
Yeah, I guess they lost the border game with Kansas, so then they created a new border game with Arkansas. I don't know.
Wait, but, do Arkansas and Missouri border? Is this a dump? Okay.
Arkansas, yeah, it sits right on top of.
Okay.
Like the golden boot, if you did it, Louisiana, Arkansas is on top of that, Missouri's on top of that.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify, because I don't have the map in front of me, and it's been a little bit, and you know, it's unfortunate. I was the geography guy in first grade for my elementary school for a couple weeks, and
you were the geography guy? What does that even mean?
Like, on the news. So we did, like, we just different classrooms alternated being on the news to do, like, these, like, 1 minute TV reports in the library, and you had different roles. And I remember one I really liked being the geography guy, and I think my whole bit was, this is maybe where the bits came from, was that, like, I think I said something to the effect of, hey, Camp Creekers, my name's Chase, and I'm the geography guy, and today's state is Washington, and the capital is Olympia. Back to you.
That's hard-hitting stuff right there. Maybe this is in the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego era, you know? Maybe that's where you're a big geography guy, but yeah, back to Arkansas. But yeah, if they beat Missouri, 8-4, win a bowl game, potentially 9-4, that's the first 9-win season since 2011. Bobby Petrino, they won 11 games that year. So to win 9 games, like, that's big time. Mm. They haven't done it yet, but they could potentially do it.
Where are we going next?
This next one I'm kicking myself for, man. I hyped up Scott Frost's ability to, you know, cover the spread. They were 9.5-point dog versus Wisconsin, and this was an exciting game. This is complete opposite of what I would have expected when Nebraska and Wisconsin got together. A lot of offense in this one, and Nebraska hung with them and covered the spread. So we both missed this one as well. Wisconsin won, but they did not cover.
It's a tradition unlike any other. Scott Frost winning or losing a close game. A close, important game. Hey, he was in it. They were in it. They fought hard. Adrian Martinez played really well in this one. Some bad picks, ultimately cost them. But yeah,
I got a hot take for you.
Mm. That you think
is
Scott Frost might win one of these
3-8 team in the history of college football?
Say that one more time.
The greatest 3-8 team in the history of college football might be the 2021 Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Are we doing this? You're just, why are you committed? Is this a bit for you? Are you committed to the Scott Frost thing?
Definitely a bit. I'm saying I don't know how many good 3-8 teams there are, but I feel like they're in so many games. But no, that was a bit, you might say.
I don't know. Braylon Allen, though, where was he all year? Why was he not the guy? Wisconsin might be talking college football playoff if he's the guy early on. What happened here? Why was he not featured like this? This dude's just, he had the breakaway touchdown run that put them up 35-28, but like, Allen's a monster. That dude's gonna rush for a billion yards at Wisconsin over the next couple years. He's a true freshman.
Yeah, I could see it. Wisconsin, low-key running back you.
They just, is it low-key? Who doesn't know about this? Who doesn't know about Monty Ball, Ron Dane, Jonathan Taylor?
I think they get credit for what they do in college. I don't think they get enough credit for how good they end up being in the NFL.
Well, most don't. Monty Ball, Ron Dane.
Melvin Gordon had several good years in the NFL.
He was okay.
Now,
he fell
Jonathan
off.
Taylor, but I'm saying they were, it's not like they were just Ron Dane. Like, Ron Dane was just a straight-up bust, you know? Like, oh,
Jonathan
yeah,
Taylor great. Might be the best running back in football now.
Yeah, I'm saying Jonathan Taylor's a stud. Like, Monty Ball even had, what, a year or two with
Denver?
No,
Monty Ball was never good.
No, Monty Ball wasn't that good. But they produce them, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Where are we going next?
Keeping it moving, the Raging Cajuns beat Liberty Flames handedly.
Yeah. This was expected. Bad year for Hugh Freeze down here. Their offensive line stinks. And these games matter for coaching stuff, where it's like Hugh Freeze is not talked about for any of these jobs. Remember Tennessee, everything was talked about Hugh Freeze, because the season that he was having at Liberty last year, and now Napier's having a better year, so his name's popping up. Hugh Freeze, Hello. Have you heard his name pop up anywhere?
No, I have not heard that this year. It seemed to be real hot, but like taboo hot last year. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you know, he could be a good guy to get it, but are people going to trust Hugh Freeze yet? And now mm-hmm. it's like, well, is he still a good enough coach to get these jobs? So it's kind of interesting how the narrative has changed, but I don't know. You got to be really good when your name has a little sour taste to it.
Mm-hmm. Phrasing.
But
where are we going next?
You out here, but if you expected this, I would have thought you would have picked Louisiana.
I did pick Louisiana.
No, I get you for Liberty.
I didn't pick Liberty. That was I want to go play the tape back. Now I'm playing the tape back. I know I didn't pick Liberty because I talked about their offensive line and I said that Liberty, it's not their type of year. No, you, sir, put me down for Liberty.
Controversy.
Yeah.
The whole season standings are in question now.
I did not pick Liberty in this game.
That would make you 7-5 this week. Then,
okay.
And then 5-6 against the spread. So I'll trust you at your word here. I'll go.
You can just go back in the podcast. Ask Tori. She listened. Be like, did Chase pick Liberty or Louisiana?
She honestly might remember that.
Where are we going next?
UCLA, USC. Bruins took care of business.
Not a lot to say here. They just did what they needed to do. The best thing about this was DTR getting a flag for signing a dude's hat.
Oh, man. That was awesome. Celebration of the year right there.
Did AJ Green just, like, hurt deep in his soul when he saw that on television?
Or Todd Gurley or the
Todd
countless
Gurley.
Other guys.
We've come a long way.
So much cooler than like, T.O. with the Sharpie. It's like he planned that. Like, DTR, he just ran, got to that part of the end zone, and it's like, dude's got a pin in the hat. He's like, shit, I'll sign an autograph. Like, that was awesome. I loved it.
Where are we going next?
The Little Apple.
Mm.
Baylor Bears. You were doubting them. Picking the Wildcats. I trusted Dave Aranda and the Bears. They went on the road. You got that difficult win in the Little Apple. It's hard to do.
This was a good win.
Take care of business.
Bohannon got knocked out early in this one, and it did not matter for Baylor. Good game from the backup. But yeah, they really, the Baylor defense, Dave Aranda did a great job keeping Deuce Vaughn and Skylar Thompson in check. And Baylor's 1-4-5 in Manhattan. So good win for Baylor. Baylor's legitimately good. Baylor might be the best team in the Big 12.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's unfortunate they stubbed their toe one too many times, I think, to be legitimate playoff contenders right now. Because I think if they had one loss, I think that Oklahoma State, potentially Oklahoma State, Baylor, or whatever, whoever ends up in the Big 12 championship, that could have been a play-in game. But I don't see it happening now.
The bigger thing, though, is I think that because it was such a bad year zero for him with Larry Fedora, that this is just a gigantic win that he was able to flip all this and change the coordinator, got out from Fedora, hired Jeff Grimes, and everything's just rolling. And now they've gotten back on track, so they look like they're in a good place. I think that's the biggest thing, is that this looked like this could be a real disaster with Aranda after year zero, and he's completely flipped the script. So if there was a coach of the year vote, he might be my coach of the year as a whole.
That's probably a good call. I bet he does win it in the Big 12. And then the big game, or is they call it the big game? They call it
just the game.
The game? Mm-hmm. Terrible. The big game is Michigan,
yes.
Ohio State, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the game, even worse than the big game.
I think the game's pretty dope.
This isn't actually a big game. It's just a game we're playing.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. Did John Elway and Aaron Rodgers not don these helmets at one time or another?
Yeah, Marshawn Lynch,
Andrew, you know, Luck.
Those are great times. But
they've actually put out some NFL legends here.
Game after 1982, honestly.
I'd have to think about that.
It's the crazy ban on the field play. Other than that, I don't know much about this rivalry. But all I do know is that Stanford got handled this weekend at home, and Cal Bears. Your Cal Bears. I know you were pretty high on them coming to this season. They've been on the disappointing side.
Very disappointing season. But they've had a really crazy year with COVID and like the restrictions, and like Cal is just in Berkeley. Like, it's just been year from hell. Musgraves, I don't think it's the best fit for this group, especially Garbers, his style. But friend of the pod, Nomly, who writes for Right for California, he had an all-time great lead on his recap for this one. So go check out rightforcalifornia.com if you've not already done so. He had this quote: 2004. You have to go back to the early glory days of Jeff Tedford to put into context how historically dominant the 124th big game was. Oh, I guess this was the big game. Maybe Ohio, we had it backwards.
Okay, so they do call it the big game.
Yeah, and the other one's the game. Okay. To put it in let me just backtrack. You have to go back to the early glory days of Jeff Tedford, old friend Jeff Tedford, to put in context how historically dominant the 124th big game was. The Bears have only won or kept the axe six times in the nearly two decades since then, with none of those other victories come close to 2004's 41-6 final margin. If you want a comparable blowout win from before that, you have to go all the way back to 1975, 48-15, and then to 1920, 38-0. This never happens. The Cal Golden Bears never blow out Stanford. Shout out to them. Go Golden Bears.
That's a quality stat right there. And just a preview for next week, just a little impromptu trivia question for you. Do you know what because you said that was 124th?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the oldest rivalry in FBS is?
Georgia Tech.
That's incorrect.
Navy, Army?
Incorrect. Your hint is that they play for Paul Bunyan's axe.
Oh, Wisconsin and Iowa. Or Minnesota.
Wisconsin and Minnesota. Yeah. That is next week. That is the longest running rivalry in college football. I know the longest one in the SEC is Georgia Auburn.
Okay.
But I think they're a few years behind that one. Yeah. Little trivia question for you. Staying in the Pac-12, though.
Mm.
We were both all over this one. Actually, no, we were not both all over this one.
No, hold on. We need to qualify this. Where I said Utah is either going to beat them now or they're going to beat them in the Pac-12 title game. And I was like, do you think
Kyle Whittingham would just
tank this one?
Try to win this game.
And then just beat them in the Pac-12 title game. Yeah.
But yeah, Utah absolutely just handled Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
one of the cooler plays of the season, honestly, when they call that timeout before the end of the first half, then take a punt all the way to the house. That place looked like it was absolutely just going crazy then. Utah, definitely a place. It's a bucket list stadium for me personally. I just want to get out to Utah. Utah and BYU, honestly.
I was going to say, Provo, I think, is higher on my list than...
they both look like, yeah, they just both look like awesome environments to get the game. But, yeah, Utah, or it's just crazy. The number three team in the country was a three-point dog to 24, and Vegas knows what they're doing. Utah... just absolutely destroyed them,
and it's good. Things are good again. We can stop pretending that Oregon is a top four team in the country. They're a top 15, top 10. Yeah, we can stop pretending.
Nobody thought Oregon was better than Ohio State, but they were just kind of holding the rankings hostage. It's like, well, they beat Ohio State. You had to keep them there. But yeah, I think we're all in agreement now with what the rankings look like. But like, Oregon did earn their way up there, but now these are really the cream is really rising to the top now.
I like it. I like it. Where are we going next, Matt Green?
Last one, Oklahoma State statement win over Texas Tech. I don't know if it's a statement win, but Oklahoma State, I feel like they bring the same game every week. You know, they're not sexy, but this defense is legit.
Yeah, I think the defense is definitely legit. But we'll see. We'll see what comes of it. Did you see what happened here? And I have to speak up for all my beloved bowl bound Tennessee Volunteers. I'm going to do a full New York Knicks thing here. Bing bong! The Tennessee Volunteers are going bowling. I hope the good folks get that reference. Do you get the bing bong reference?
I didn't get the reference.
I'm going to send this video. So after the Knicks, like one of their early season, it's one of my favorite videos. I watch it once a week. It's the crazy Knicks fans after an early win, but they were all just like losing their minds. And there's this one dude randomly just like bing bong. And it's classic. Either way, Tennessee Volunteers going bowling, finishing the year. It looks like 7-5. Just what can you say other than just tremendous content from Josh Heupel and Velus Jones returning to kickback for six, doing all kinds of awesome Velus Jones stuff. Great work all around.
Who did they play this week?
The mighty South Alabama Jaguars.
Just putting a beat down on USA. Is that what Tennessee was doing this weekend? First they cancel a game with our armed forces. And then they beat down USA. Most unpatriotic team in the entire country.
How dare you? I don't know if you knew this or not. We have an amazing flyover from our troops.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, okay. Sir.
All right. Don't take this away from me. Let me enjoy this in peace.
Was it Army? Was it Army they canceled the game with?
Yes. Like it was Army. Game? Yeah, and we replaced it with Akron, I want to say.
They're scared.
It's next year. It's literally a next year game.
What kind of bowl? Have you looked at bowl projections or anything?
I saw like, Duke kind of Mayo in Tennessee? Charlotte.
Okay.
And I'm going to... if it's in Charlotte, we're going. But yeah, it just depends on where they're going.
That was the Belk Bowl, right?
Yes.
Is that the same game, basically?
Yes.
So that's like a Big Ten. Well, who... I guess that's...
yes, it's big. I'm pretty sure it's big...
because I know Georgia played Louisville in that one year, but Tennessee, that was when Tennessee played Indiana, right? Is that Belk Bowl? Or is that the Gator Bowl?
Wait, which one are you talking about?
Tennessee played Indiana a couple years ago.
Oh, that was the Outback Bowl, wasn't it? Or no, that was the Gator. That was the Gator. Because that one was in...
I'm not sure what conferences are going to what bowls these days, but...
I'm pretty sure it was the Gator Bowl.
As long as you don't go to the Birmingham Bowl. I think that's where everyone just wants to stay out of the Birmingham Bowl.
Okay, so I'm seeing Texas Bowl as a possibility. Not going if it's that against Kansas State. That'd be a good game, though. Duke's Mayo against North Carolina.
Maybe you'll get lucky. It could be like Liberty Bowl. A little short drive to Memphis. What's that drive?
Did you say short drive to Memphis? That's a 6.5-hour drive.
Is it really?
Yes, Memphis is Arkansas.
Huh.
Memphis is... it's just as far to Memphis as it is to Jacksonville, Florida for me.
I think you're a big geography guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard some interesting stat. I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like the corner from the top right corner of Tennessee to the bottom left is like the same distance from like Detroit to like Orlando or something like that. I don't know. It's something huge. Like I butchered it. Like that's not the exact stat, but it is something that kind of blows your mind.
Hmm. Well, I've seen that, the Liberty Bowl, like you mentioned, in Memphis, and then the Music City Bowl in Nashville.
Okay.
So it just depends. Two of those I'll go to, two of those I will not.
Hey, just getting the extra month of practice. That's what Heupel, I'm sure what he's celebrating right now, just being able to do that. Because having Florida State next week to decide a bowl game, like that's just that's going to be insane. I have this question for my brother. What would be worse, like as a Florida fan, like at this point you've already like fired Dan Mullen, but like if the Swamp is 50% capacity for the Florida State game, would that be worse, or would it be worse if it was at 100% capacity but 50% of it was Florida State fans?
Ooh. I would say if it's 100% capacity and it's 50% Florida State fans,
I honestly couldn't decide, because it's like for them to take over your stadium, that's terrible. But
I meant to send you a picture of what Tennessee looked like on Saturday. Well, I meant to send you a picture of Saturday, because remember when there was like this very scary and very, very real Georgia takeover in Neyland a week ago? Buddy.
Pretty much every other year thing for the fans from Athens.
Right. And my buddy sent a picture from the stadium, because I did not go to 28 degree South Alabama, Tennessee in person. I set that one out in my comfy home and at a very good chicken establishment, and ate some chicken and had a good time. And then went to Target and bought some stuff for the Christmas. It was great. It was a fun little Saturday.
Nice little Saturday. Go to Bed Bath & Beyond, my Home Depot.
Don't know if I'll have time. We're at that age, Matt Green. Like, we're in our 30s. Like, this is us now.
This is my dad quoting Animal House in 1998. Me quoting old school in 2021, honestly.
Oh, we're old, man. But no, there was a reason. And he sent me the picture, and it was just all black everywhere. Because it's cold and Tennessee have a lot of black stuff and black jackets and everything. He's like, oh, another Georgia takeover. And it was like, yeah, who could have foreseen that? Who could have imagined that a lot of Tennessee fans would be wearing black coats and all that kind of stuff for 28 degree game?
How do they not have their orange coats ready? This is football season.
Right. Goodness gracious. I still cannot believe that thing happened, and that whole narrative ruined 48 hours for me. That was the dark ages of the college football season. So I'm glad that's over. Matt Green, we did it.
Yes, sir. It was another excellent week. We got rivalry week next week. Final week of the season.
Man, it flew by.
Yeah, it really has. I think game day is going to be at the game, not the big game. But
why are they not at the Egg Bowl?
I mean, Michigan, Ohio State. I mean, that's essentially.
You were like just at Ohio State.
But this is at Michigan.
I know, but like, I don't know.
I think that does make a difference, because you haven't been to Ann Arbor. So I think that does make a difference. And it's, I mean, this is like a quarterfinal to the college football playoff.
That's
honestly true. Like, this is Michigan is one of the few teams. They're not talked about at all, but I mean, they're in control of their own fate. You know, I mean, they went out. They're in the playoff. Like, I don't think anyone's really focusing on Michigan, but.
I think it's because they literally have never beaten Ohio State under Jim Harbaugh. Like, it's just like until we see them play competitively against Ohio State, we're just not putting them in.
I think it's one of the last like 15 or something. It's bad at this point, but we can.
It's quietly Georgia Tech territory.
Yeah, and Georgia Tech I think's got like two or three in the last like 15 years.
We got a lot of stuff to hit and get to wrap up with Vandy. Fun times.
What it is, it's the Georgia Florida or Florida Georgia over that Spurrier and Urban Meyer like dominance of I think it was like 13 out of 14 or something like that Florida had at one point.
Kind of like what it's going to be with Tennessee Georgia with Heupel and the back end of Kirby's tenure.
Yeah, something like that.
before Matt Campbell comes in 7 years from now.
Something similar to that.
Yeah, and finishes it off.
When Matt Campbell comes in 7 years from now?
Yeah.
After Heupel wins a couple natties
because
of the NFL?
Yeah. He gets an NFL job, and we just are like, all right, let's bring in Heupel.
He goes back to Oklahoma. Those are his roots, you know?
That actually scared me. The Oklahoma, if Lincoln Riley did leave, like, Heupel would be an early call for them.
That's honestly, I did just kind of say that off the cuff, but that is a good point, honestly. If Riley left, he's got to be near the close to the top of their list. Everyone wants their Kirby, man. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants their alma mater guy. And if he's actually one of the best coaches in college football, then you got to get him.
Matt Green, always a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.